welcome to another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. This is your host, Jack, and with me today are my two guests.
Hi, I'm James.
I'm Melissa.
So today we have a very interesting topic, an interesting theme. I know this is probably the third episode in a row that we've done that is movie related. We will eventually get out of the movie podcast themes. We do have stand-up acts coming up soon, and we'll have food podcasts coming up, but just for now, movies have been the most convenient for all parties involved. So that's what we've been doing. I hope you enjoy this one. We're doing movies where Hugh Jackman sings. As the topic today.
I was very excited about this.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad. This was one that as soon as I thought of it, I'm like, yes, let's do this one.
Mm-hmm.
So the films that we're covering today are Les Miserables, The Greatest Showman, and we're also including a 1999 performance of Oklahoma, which was filmed for home viewing. So even though it's a stage performance, it's filmed like a movie would be filmed. Mm-hmm. And it was released on DVD, so I had a copy of that because my high school did a production of Oklahoma, and that was the best comparison at the time. In terms of background, I saw Les Mis in theaters. It came out Christmas Day of that year, and then we saw it the day after and ate at B-Dubs afterwards.
Oh,
it
that was a good day. Yes!
It was a lot of fun.
And I remember I had, like, nicknamed the story Sad Haircut.
I remember that distinctly throughout watching this movie.
Because I had no idea what it was about. Like, I'd heard the name and I didn't know what Les Mis was about. And just from the trailers, I'm like, well, Anne Hathaway gets a haircut and she's sad about it. So I would call it that as a joke. And I got so into it that completely mistakenly, when we were at the ticket booth, I'm like, yes, one for Sad Haircut, please.
One for the Poseidon Adventure.
And remind me again how the person who was ringing you up responded to that, because all I remember is that the woman behind me ordered two tickets for the Django.
That is the better memory. Now,
was that for the Chameleon movie or for the Django Unchained?
It was for Django Unchained.
Okay. The Django.
Yeah, yeah, I think the woman just was like, oh, we don't have that. I think when we went to go see The Dark Knight Rises, we got Tim to ask for The Wayne Knight Rises.
Yes, we got our brother to do that, yeah.
And the woman ignored it. Like, yeah.
Wayne Knight Rises, yeah.
Yeah, I heard Knight Rises. I know what show to give you, but Sad Haircut is too far out there.
I'm glad I got that kind of reaction. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. So yeah, that's how I saw Les Mis. I own the Oklahoma DVD because I wanted to do my homework before the high school production of it. So that was kind of my quote-unquote research for it, was watching the Hugh Jackman version. And I watched The Greatest Showman in preparation for this episode. I still had not seen it until this past week. How about your backgrounds with these three?
I was aware of Oklahoma existing because I just remember that being brought out as like a fun fact, like when the X-Men movies, well, the first run of X-Men movies were big, like, oh, he's this big action star, but did you know Hugh Jackman actually has a strong background in musical theater? Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. So I knew he had done it, but I hadn't seen it until just recently. And we saw Les Mis. I really loved Les Mis. And I also just saw Greatest Showman in preparation for this podcast also, but it had been on my list like since I first heard about it. I thought it sounded really fun, so I was glad to have a reason to sit down and dedicate attention to it.
And I actually saw Greatest Showman in theaters and hadn't seen the other two. But when I saw Greatest Showman in theaters, I was very excited for the movie, like anticipating it. And I was not let down. I loved it. Bought it on Steelbook as soon as I could. Watched it twice. Yeah, it is very good. And then I actually let time get away from me and watched both Les Mis and Oklahoma last night when I got home at 9. And I had to work at 6.
You suffer for this art.
Yeah. I can call it that.
Thank you for your dedication.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I'd heard you guys talk about Les Mis, and my roommates love Les Mis, and which one do you want to talk about first?
We're going to be going in order of the year it was released, so Oklahoma will be the first one we're going to be discussing.
I don't know how I felt about Oklahoma.
Yeah, this was your first introduction to that musical as a whole, right?
I mean, everyone knows, like Oklahoma, Where the Wind Blows.
Yeah, like, I've heard of that.
Yeah, like, you're introduced to that, like, as soon as you're able to breathe.
Yeah. Yes!
Yeah. As soon as your wind can blow, you're introduced to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell. I actually made a note, like, I can't tell if I don't like the movie or if I'm really tired.
That's very fair. I have a lot to say about Oklahoma as well. Like, I really enjoyed being in the production. I think it was a good, because this was my senior year of high school I was in it, so it was a nice cap
mm-hmm.
to high school theater. But I definitely have issues with the plot line. I think it's a very dated show.
Yes.
Yeah.
The dialogue and just the character interactions and the character motivations, I think, are very outdated, mm-hmm. and I do not approve of a lot of them. But I will say that I think this definitely takes place during Hugh Jackman's Dreamboat years. Mm-hmm. He gets to be, like, very charming in this movie slash show. His vocals sound great, but I think that's also due to his age at the time and just the character he's playing. And comparing this cast of Oklahoma to the film that I believe was in, like, the 1950s or something,
mm-hmm.
I like this cast way more than the classic film cast, so I'm glad that we have this version of it. And I think it's just very fascinating, too, since it's a West End production, that it's British people and Australian people
playing. Is it really?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Which you wouldn't even be able to tell, because they're all really good at
it. Mm-hmm.
I knew Hugh Jackman was, but I didn't know the rest of them were.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, Oklahoma is quite a puzzle. I think it's a fine show. Some of the music's quite lovely. Like, it's fun, mm-hmm. but it is, I think, sort of around for nostalgia. Yeah.
The way I kept thinking about it is, like, as soon as I got to, like, the hour and a half mark, I'm like, all of these plot points wrap up, like, the end of a sitcom episode.
Yeah.
It was, like, a really long episode of MASH.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, so Oklahoma's fun, and I think, but again, I don't think it's a show I'd need to see again, unless it does have, like, a big star performer like Hugh Jackman in it. And he does a good job in this. He is very charming and open-faced and just wide-eyed, and you can see how he got there. Like, yeah, it's you. You're the farmhand that everyone in town loves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't see enough of him in the movie.
Yeah, I wish...
There was, like, an hour where he wasn't there, and I made a note, like, where is he? Where's my boy?
Yeah, I kind of wish it was less of an ensemble piece and it was more about whatever his character's name is.
Curly.
Curly?
I called him Greg Brady Hair. Hugh Greg Brady Hair.
That is apt.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, you were the main lady in this play?
Yes, I played Lori in this, which I do actually have one note to that I don't care for this Lori in particular.
You did the better job.
Yes,
no,
you did.
Not even saying that, although I appreciate you guys thinking that, perhaps, but I think that Shirley Jones, who played the 1950s Lori, was, like, the better
of course.
One.
Mama Partridge herself, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Huh.
But I think overall this cast is better than the old film, but I was not a fan of that particular character's interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that was the character that I played in the show.
Also, something about this movie, like, I kept expecting it to end.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's real long.
Yeah, like, as soon as, like, the two, like, love interests got together, like, okay, ends. Nope, there's still 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they've got married. Cool, end. No, okay, more hijinks. No, okay, there's a hearing. All right.
Yeah, it is... Yeah, like the series finale of MASH. It's 3 hours long and it has 8 storylines in it.
It does. It really does. And you know, if I had seen those storylines, like, if I followed just, like, Curly's storyline or, like, the young couple's storyline, like, maybe those back-to-back would be a good movie.
Yeah.
But I don't need all of them together in 1 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very accurate. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did cut out a little bit here and there for the show when doing it in a high school context because it's just so long.
Yeah, like I honestly didn't remember a lot from your production of Oklahoma except that you were in it and you had a nice dress. I don't remember this at all. Like, did they cut this out or was my memory that bad the whole time I was watching this?
Yeah, they did cut out a significant bit of it, which helped the pacing of the show itself and helped all of us actors who wanted to get out and go to Steak and Shake and everything at a reasonable hour before going to school the next day.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to Les Miserables, the 2012 film adaptation. I think this is probably one of the best musical adaptations.
Yeah.
And I think it will stand the test of time since it does feature the live singing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you watch really old musicals where they're very obviously not doing live singing, it looks very silly. And I think this movie works because they're just doing their live singing. And it's going to stand the test of time because of that core factor in there.
You're saying silly things can't stand the test of time?
I think they can. It's just people can't call this silly later on, if that makes sense.
I would love to see where society is where we can, though.
It's only as silly as any production of Les Mis is silly, and I love Les Mis just because it is such, like, poignancy and melodrama. And just, like, big emotions. And then it's also, like, Master of the House and Javert, like, shouting his name at every new person he meets. There is something very comical to Les Mis also. And I think that's why I like it so much. Like, I will cry and I will also just giggle to myself at stuff that's not supposed to be funny.
I do think that meme culture has made me unable to take this movie seriously anymore, but I'm okay with it since my first viewing did have the emotional resonance and impact they were going for. But when this movie first came out, there were just so many memes about it that I can't watch it without thinking of all of these different jokes, which I'm okay with because it just makes the viewing fun rather than a downer, but it definitely makes it harder to watch it and take it at face value.
The one thing that kept running through my head while I watched this movie again was that a couple years ago there was talk that there might be like a CBS legal drama that was a loose adaptation of Les Mis.
Yeah.
And that it was like an escaped, like a, or like a freed prisoner who was like trying to make his life better. And he's got this like young girl he's adopted and he's trying to live on the up and up. But there's like another lawyer who knew him when he was a criminal that was like, I knew you when you were a criminal. I know who you really are. So just that part of Les Mis, but as just a law procedural. And there was a Tumblr post that was like, okay, I understand that working, but if there's not a part where, like, lawyer Jean Valjean lifts a car off of somebody and lawyer Javert is like, only one lawyer can be that strong, then why even do this? So only one lawyer can be that strong is the sentence I just kept, like, repeating to myself and laughing throughout this entire, like, 3-hour film.
Should we explain the plot for people that aren't familiar?
Oh, yeah.
And should we have done that for Oklahoma, or do you think we it's really just, like, two people that don't think they like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in a community.
Pretty much. A very active community.
Yeah, there's, like, you know, dances and ice cream socials and
thick accents.
Thick accents.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Oklahoma. Les Mis.
Yeah,
you do it.
Okay. Because this is your first time you've also ever seen Les Mis, so I'm interested to hear how you absorbed this.
I'll explain why I don't want to yet.
Okay.
But
okay, so Hugh Jackman plays Jean Valjean. This is set in the French Revolution. And Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread to feed his starving nephew, and he gets thrown into jail. We don't know if that nephew was ever okay.
Nope.
So he gets put in jail, and Javert is his, like, guard, the local policeman that's, like, his guard. And when Jean Valjean is released on parole, Javert is like, you're a criminal, you'll be back here, I'm watching you. And Jean Valjean gets, like, the second lease on life, and he becomes a mayor of some town.
Yeah, like, right away, like, well, it's, like, 8 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, yeah, he became a mayor.
He really worked hard.
I thought he was just, like, a factory, like, business owner at first. Like, no, he's mayor.
He's mayor. Anne Hathaway plays this woman named Fantine who, like, loses her job and she's destitute and she's like, I have this daughter and her father ran out on me, and so she lives with this innkeeper and his wife, and, like, I send them the money from my factory job, like, every week. If I lost this job, there's no way I have to take care of her. And she, like, gets sick and she dies, and Jean Valjean is like, I will go find this girl, I will adopt her, I will be her new father and family now. So he does that, and then we see, like, the girl grows up and she falls in love with a revolutionary.
With Eddie Redmayne. Redmayne.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne. And yeah, Javert is still hunting down Jean Valjean. This is a grudge he's had for like 20 years.
So one thing I want to point out about this movie before you continue, I noticed that like because Javert just keeps popping up, he must be Agent Smith. So like every like French officer is like quantum Javert. 100% could be Javert at any moment. And it's the only way I could understand why he is wherever he is at all times.
Yeah, he's just fully involved. There's a million other things he could be doing with his job, but he's doing this.
We don't go into his like love romance life or anything like that. He's like, nothing. I'm here to do job.
Yeah, yeah, job is all he has.
I catch bad guy.
I am a star of the earth.
We could get to continue. I just want to rant about that.
Yeah, so then the play ends with so Jean Valjean, he has Javert. Like, he has Javert captured, and he could kill Javert, but he doesn't. And Javert is so, like, bewildered by this. Like, I can't not catch bad guy, and also I can't die in the line of duty catching bad guy. What do I do? And so he just jumps off a bridge.
Yeah.
And
it's grody.
Yeah.
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 That hit at the end.
It's rough.
It's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Jean Valjean, he saves the man whose adopted daughter has fallen in love with, and they get married, and he dies a peaceful end, knowing that he did the most for her. And then Fantine comes out as a ghost to like beckon him to the other side, where all the other ghosts are, because a bunch of people die in this movie.
Yeah. There's a whole ghost epilogue.
Yeah, there's a ghost epilogue, like any good film.
Yeah. Also, Helena Bonham Carter is the innkeeper.
Yes, the innkeepers are Helena Bonham Carter and Sacha Baron Cohen.
Sacha Baron Cohen, that's...
And they are champs.
Also, Sacha Baron Cohen, like, in the song, like, Master of the House, I noticed, like, is he the only one that sings in a French accent?
Yeah, it's only him!
Was that... I wonder if that was his decision?
I'm sure it was.
Like, oh, we're not singing in French? I really wanted to sing in French.
Also, sidebar... While I was watching this movie, another thing I kept doing to myself, because this is a very good movie, but there are, like, lots of long solo numbers where I would kind of glaze out a little bit, and I started thinking about what if his name was Sacha the Baron Cohen, like Dwayne the Rock Johnson, and I started doing that to every three-name person I could think of, like Neil the Patrick Harris, Tiffany the Amber Thiessen.
Paul the F. Tompkins.
Paul the F. Tompkins.
That kind of works.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but that's the plot of Les Mis. That's what it is.
So the reason I didn't want to explain the plot is because today I had like a random thought and I've been trying to piece it together and see if it works. But I'm like, what if Tron is like Les Mis? Like, my name is Tron Valtron. And I am Sark. Like Cosette would be like Ram, and like Flynn would maybe be, I don't know, like maybe like the priest or something like that. Like, I kept like fan casting it, but I'm like, this is kind of like almost Les Mis, but I don't know if it actually is.
That's a production I need to see now.
I just really Tron Valtron.
Yeah, Tron. It's Halloween costume. I'm Tron. Ooh, Valtron.
Yes, 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 yes.
You just have a big baguette with you, and you've got the numbers on your chest.
I'm going to have to buy a lot of lights.
Tron Valtron!
I do love it. I only do pun costumes. Man. Also, about Jean Valjean, he only has, like, two haircuts. Like, he goes into hiding, like, four times, but he only has two exaggerations of the same haircut.
Yeah, he does always look like himself.
He starts out looking, well, I wrote it down, he looks like a wet, dirty vampire. Like you see him at first, he's bald and his eyes are like bloodshot and he's got a big beard. He looks like Rasputin. And then he never looks like that again. And he gets like regular people hair, where it's just the hair that's on top of his head and on the side of his head.
Yeah.
And then the next time he goes in hiding, that hair is bigger.
Yeah, he doesn't play around with beards. Yeah. He doesn't get like an eye patch or anything.
Doesn't get a different haircut. Doesn't wear hats. Well, he wears a top hat, but
yeah. If you want hats, you got to wait for Greatest Showman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yes.
Ooh. So the only other note that I really wrote down is that I think Hugh Jackman's physical—not his hair, obviously, but like his physical performance and transformation, and like his vocal transformation is very believable, very impressive. You really think that he has aged this many years over the course of time, especially when. besides Russell Crowe, I'm guessing everyone else is kind of cast differently from the middle of the movie, where you have young Cosette to old Cosette, and they've changed actors and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really believe his transformation throughout all of this.
Yeah. He turns into a weird old Steve Buscemi. And I can't I can't wait for that to really happen.
That would be very
the final chrysalis. I was really impressed by this, how well he does just the gravity of that role, and how this is a role that takes like 20 years of his life across the story, and he seems the right age at every time he's supposed to do that, which was something I think the movie did really well on the whole, like just a combination of like makeup and the actor's physical performances. Like Anne Hathaway looks dead.
Yeah.
Way to go, guys. That's a
feat. That was a good death scene.
Yeah.
I liked all the, I liked the duel scene maybe the most. I love any time where actors like sing over each other. I don't recommend watching it with subtitles like I did, because I can't, that was me paying attention to three things, and one of them is more consistent than the other, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
All right.
The duel scene makes me think of one of the memes that came out where it was set to the lyrics of I Don't Dance in High School Musical 2.
Yes! I also saw one where it was set to the lyrics of Eye of the Tiger, because I went through my like sad haircut tag on my Tumblr today to remember all the stuff from around 2012.
Oh yeah.
Those were high times.
Sad haircut time.
Yeah, I'm glad Les Mis is a story that continues on. Like, that's a show I've seen it live. Well, I've seen the same production twice. I went back like one night after the other to see it at the Muni, and I'd love to see it like any other time. Like, it seems, it was so great, and I imagine it will always be so great. Even a even a lackluster performance of Les Mis is still going to be a fantastic night out. Mm-hmm. It'll always be enjoyable.
One of the biggest things I took away from my first viewing was, like, I could not tell where the climax was going to be.
Yeah.
Because we got into three different years, three different ages of this world, and every time we introduced, like, new characters. And sometimes those characters stuck around, sometimes they transformed into new characters, or they stayed, what have you. And I'm like, I don't know who's going to be doing what to who.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, what's going to be happening. Also, did any Redmayne, like, really sing?
Mm-hmm. All of them really sang. They sang live on the set. Yeah, so like Anne Hathaway had like one shot, one opportunity, because they were cutting her real hair live while she was singing. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was like when the big things in this movie came out, like they're not doing pre-recordings and then like matching the recordings later while they're filming. Like everything was live.
So does that mean like the soundtrack that we hear, like if you listen to the soundtrack, it's the audio they pull offset?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it allowed for some really neat variances. Like they're making like choices on the set in the day in costume that they might not have thought of while they're just wearing normal street clothes in a recording booth. Like there's not every line is sung. Like Jean Valjean might not be like, who am I? He's like, who am I? Like, he's sort of like talking to himself and not like singing to the world.
But everyone talks to himself a lot. That's kind of what singing is.
Oh, but like there's a lot more like variances in how each line is performed. It's not all Broadway singing in this movie. There's lines that are like muttered and hissed and cried and howled and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think kind of gives it an advantage over the stage production, because in a stage production, you kind of have to be so boisterous and bold, where with a film, it's like you can get these quieter moments within a musical that you maybe couldn't get if you were performing it on stage.
That kind of also took me out of the movie a little bit. The musicals I'm used to, when people burst into the song, it punctuates an emotion or punctuates like a transition or a change of character. And for singing to be nearly constant, I had to like adjust like how I was watching the movie to know what was going to happen, or like how I'm reading these characters.
Yeah, I think that was an adjustment for me. Like, I think I thought it was a musical and not an opera.
Yeah, opera. That's the right word. Also, that reminds me, when I used to work at Toys R Us, there's a piece, and I worked in electronics with this guy named Dan, who was an opera singer. I told you this, he was an opera singer, And Les Mis just came out, and I asked his opinion. He's like, "Oh, I hated it.
Yeah, oh, geez.
Absolutely terrible. There's not good singing in there at all." And I remember that distinctly.
Oh, and also, like, we're here to talk about Hugh Jackman, but I feel like Russell Crowe gets a bad rap for his performance in this movie. I think he's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, he's not like a big singer, but I think his actual voice is lovely. He just has a nice sounding voice, and I think he uses it well. And it's a very compelling performance. Like, I don't know if it had been another actor if I had would have loved Javert as much as I did the first time I was introduced to this character. Like, would I have loved Javert to begin with, or did Russell Crowe make me love Javert? Who can say?
Yeah. I was really surprised by Eddie Redmayne's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That was very good. Yeah, everyone did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed a trend in how I watch Hugh Jackman movies,
mm-hmm.
in that any time where he becomes a parental figure or like a role model, I'm like, yes, give me more of this.
Yeah.
Like this starts like, because we used to watch a lot of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
like this starts with like watching Wolverine, like be a disgruntled dad.
Yeah.
To watching like this Hugh Jackman be like, hell yeah, I got a daughter. This is rad. I'm going to teach her so much.
Mm-hmm.
Love her so much.
Yeah.
Protect her.
Yeah.
Like, he has good energy for that kind of role. And you see a little bit of that in Greatest Showman, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely. It's interesting going off of what you mentioned about your opera co-worker
mm-hmm.
hating this movie.
Yeah.
I remember when it first came out, a lot of the people that I did theater with were very nitpicky about this movie.
Oh, yes.
And really complained about certain things. And I'm glad that I can approach it now, even though I did not rewatch it for the purpose of this podcast, because I've seen it plenty of times mm-hmm. since mm-hmm. then. And back when it was on cable a lot,
yeah.
the first year or so after it came out, I would watch it anytime it was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of glad that I'm removed from those opinions now
yeah.
because it's just nice to be able to watch it.
They did their best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a solid cast.
Moving on to The Greatest Showman. I'm yes. pretty sure my TV hated this movie
aww.
Because it has never had this mm-hmm. issue before or after I put in this Blu-ray in the Blu-ray player. But as soon as the movie starts with the opening number, I just hear static and like a screaming noise and it was like that for the majority of the film.
Really?
Even when they just had scenes of dialogue, it was still like with a buzzy sound whenever people would talk. It was crazy.
It is a very bassy movie.
Yeah, maybe that was it, just like the bass settings on my Blu-ray player or TV are just not apt for this movie.
Yeah,
but it was insane. I was really worried that something in the sound system had broken, but it hasn't had that issue since, so I don't know what went wrong with this film.
It was, the TV was like, Greatest Showman? I'm a TV. I show.
The first note that I took is that Hugh Jackman steals a loaf of bread in two of these movies.
Yeah.
Oh, it does, doesn't he?
Yeah, in the first, like, in Les Mis, it's implied, and then in this one, it's the child version of him stealing bread, but
yes.
still, there is stolen bread in both of these movies. And I liked the music a lot more than I expected.
Yeah.
It's not catchier than I expected.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah, especially since the same people wrote the music and lyrics, I believe, for La La Land.
Yes.
Which, I like that movie, but I think the music is the least memorable part of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was very pleasantly surprised that it seemed like the music and lyrics in this movie were just so much more
yes.
memorable, and
mm-hmm.
I liked them a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie reminds me a lot of Moulin Rouge, not necessarily in terms of realism, because I think this movie is less wackier and filmed in a less wackier style than Moulin Rouge, but
yeah.
like
yeah.
the scenic design, the costumes.
It's a very vivid movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very colorful.
That is something that this director has only done, like music videos, and I think he did, like, a documentary and, like, commercials and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just worked with Hugh Jackman. I believe he had directed a Oscar or an award ceremony, and he was talking
yeah.
to Hugh Jackman about it. And one of them pitched it to the other, and it just stuck, and I think that it's like 5 or 6 years in the making or something like that. It took a long time to get this movie made. But it is, yeah. They put a lot of effort into it and a lot of historic boundaries on it. They honored the area it came from and made it a very good period piece. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy period pieces, so that was a nice bonus in watching this. I really enjoyed it, and I got to see a little bit of High School Musical in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple details about this movie I really liked. Mm-hmm. I like how Zac Efron and Zendaya are the same height.
Are they?
Yeah. You watch them in that number together, they are eye to eye.
Huh.
I don't know. I just liked that. And also I like how there's very clearly like 25 years difference between Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron in age, and nobody says a word about it. The movie almost treats it like they're supposed to be the same age.
It is weird. Like, he's almost ageless, Zac Efron? Like, the way they imply it?
Yeah.
Like, yes, this man, but he could be a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah, and also talking about age, it's weird that Hugh Jackman is like 6 years older in Greatest Showman than he is in Les Miserables, but in Les Miserables he's playing much older, and in this movie he's playing a lot younger. He's very good at it.
He is. He's very good at being spry.
Yeah. He's a very spry man.
Yeah.
You see him being spry, and then you also see him play like a lot of gravitas. He's got a lot of range.
The intro to this movie sets like a nice tone for the remainder,
mm-hmm.
or for the entirety of the movie, because it starts out from the menu music, which I kind of wish it didn't, because that's a nice intro to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts out like with a big smoky room and like in the circus, and you're seeing behind like the bleachers in him with him in the shadows, and the music is like beating like the rhythmic like not cinematography. The cinematography is good too. The choreography,
mm-hmm.
the rhythm, and the music and the choreography and this really blend very very wonderfully together. But the intro to the movie is very like cheering, quiet. Quiet line, more loud, more bass, mm-hmm. quiet line. And that kind of sets a nice, like, you know, wavelength for the rest of how the movie paces itself.
Mm-hmm.
With nice, like, energy and then very serious topics.
Yeah. Yeah, I had such a fun time with this movie. I figured I would like it because you like it so much. And I feel like we have similar taste about these things, being siblings, which we did not mention before.
We didn't.
New listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I figured I would also like this, but boy, it is so much fun. It's just big and sparkly, and it doesn't care how silly it is.
No.
Like, the part at the end where he rides up on an elephant just like his daughter's ballet practice, and, like, the elephant is such clearly CG. And, like, this movie had, like, a lot of, that's very obviously a green screen. That's very obviously CGI. That person is not singing live or saying those words live, but we don't care. Like, that's part of, like, the charm of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Is that there are a lot of seams that you can see.
This movie takes itself, like, it does take itself seriously when it needs to,
mm-hmm.
but when it wants to be fun. Like, it's very joyful. Like,
yes.
I love any audition scene in a movie. It makes, like, for a great montage.
Yeah.
And I loved, the montage of auditions in this, where he's like, I want freaks. I want my, like, I guess we didn't explain, like, too much the plot of this.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'll take the reins on that. In The Greatest Showman, you follow the life of P.T. Barnum before and after, before and during his success of starting the circus. But before, you see him as, you start with him as a boy and falling in love with this girl in, like, I guess it's like a townhouse, like, it's weird how kids know each other in this movie, actually.
Yeah.
It's not really addressed.
He's like...
He's a tailor's son.
Yeah, and I think his dad is the tailor to her dad. Also, his dad is like a character actor I've seen in a million TV shows, and this was the first movie I ever saw him in. I'm like, way to go, guy. You're in a movie.
You're in a movie. But yeah, so you see this young boy who's, you know... He loses his dad, and he gets down on life, and, like, he continues to write to this girl that he likes. And they actually, like, do get together. He saves up money.
Yeah, I like that.
And he starts, like, you see them start a family. You see them, like, raise, like, two daughters. And then you see him lose his job. And he's like, I'll start something wonderful. The same wonderfulness that I, like, tried to teach, or that I tried to show to my wife now, when we were kids. And he opens, like, a wax museum, but that doesn't work at all.
What, Sorry, one more sidebar. There's a poster in the background of one of these scenes. It's talking about the wax figurines, and it doesn't say full size. It says full-length wax figurines. Like, I don't know if
no depth, no height.
I don't know if they're as thick as that person, but they are as tall.
Thin Wadlow. Yeah, so the daughter says, you have too many dead things in your museum. You need life in it.
Yeah.
And you see moments previously in this movie where when he's at his most downtrodden, he's reached out with kindness by those that are different.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? These people could use some time in the spotlight. And you actually see a little bit of, like, his position on how he helps these people change throughout the movie.
Yeah.
But he, you know, starts getting bit busier and busier, and he opens the circus. And that goes all well and good for a while, and it's very wonderful. And then he tries to expand it. He gets too obsessed with proving to his wife's parents that he can fulfill her in having giving her a good life, which includes going overseas, meeting... what was her name?
Not Queen Victoria, but the actual singer.
Yeah, the singer. He meets the most popular singer in
Jenny
England. Jenny
Lind.
Jenny Lind, yeah.
Who I think they say is from Sweden, but has like a very British accent and is a redhead.
Yeah. They go to meet the Queen, they meet Jenny Lind, and he's like, okay, you're the greatest singer in Europe. Let's try you overseas. And it hits big, and he's like, okay, great, more money, excellent. And they start going overseas, and it all crumbles very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I will say, I could have done without the opera singer plotline. That was my least favorite part of the film, and I feel like too much time was paid towards it.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that time could have been dispersed elsewhere. I liked the Zac Efron and Zendaya storyline, and I wish I could see more of that.
They're fantastic.
Opera storyline.
Yeah, and like after watching Spider-Man Homecoming recently for another episode of this podcast, Zendaya is a champ.
Yeah, she
is so much fun to watch in anything she's in.
Oh, speaking of champs, Letty in this movie.
Yeah.
The bearded lady she has a weird name with a lot of vowels in it. But the bearded lady, Letty, just steals the show away.
Yes.
She is the MVP.
She is the actual star of this.
Yeah. Yeah. If you hear any like proud female vocals in the soundtrack, like that's Letty. And it really like, it's great, like, watching the movie, listening to her on the soundtrack and going back, like, oh, you're just as wonderful as you are, like, in the music.
It is really fun. I definitely recommend it. And Hugh Jackman, this is him at his most spry and charming and delightful. This feels like the most of who Hugh Jackman is as a real person. Like, they just put him in a period costume and threw him up on the screen. And he's supposed to be P.T. Barnum, but really he's just still also Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. I know he threw a lot of, like passion into this project, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he was a producer, but he definitely, like, put a lot of hard work into getting this out there.
Yeah, and, like, I imagine, I don't know if anybody else would have been in this if it would have gotten made.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was really sold on, like, his star power, and he's a really good fit for this film.
Yeah.
There was a note I wrote down that I forgot to research. When Zendaya and her brother in this movie come up during the montage. Oh, I never mentioned why I like the montage scene. Why the funny moment. It's when like, the world's heaviest man comes up to him, and he's like, have I heard, like, can I ask how much he weighs? Like, I don't like to boast about this. And he says to P.T. Barnum, like, 500 pounds. And he's like, really? 750 pounds? And he's like, yes! I really enjoyed that.
That was fun.
But when Zendaya and, like, her brother come up, they say, we do a trapeze act. And I didn't know that trapeze was a thing prior to circuses existing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, I didn't think about that either. Like, where was trapeze before P.T. Barnum invented a circus?
Yeah, I probably should have researched this, but yeah. I have two other minor notes. Like, little wonders. I love the painted backdrops in this movie.
Yes.
So you don't have, they don't have like a sound stage and like green screen backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Like you can see like a few blocks ahead and then there's like painted backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's most visible on like when P.T. Barnum and his wife are like dancing on like the roof.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it a little bit in like some of like the landscapes. But yeah, that's an excellent touch. I also love all of the little, all the characters.
Yes, they're all delightful.
Yeah, and I really love the Siamese twins.
Yes,
they're,
yeah.
They're split from, no, they're two people.
Yeah.
But like, their torsos are connected.
Yeah, and they're like, barely connected. I think I saw a lot of frames where I'm like, they're just standing real close next to each other,
but,
aren't they?
But I really love that, like, every time you see them, their arms are around each other.
Yeah,
and
their
I'm like,
bodies.
Yeah, like, regardless of if you're twins, I want more characters to always have their arms around another character.
That's their permanent default state.
Yeah, because that is hugely endearing.
It is, it is.
Yeah.
I wish there would have been more time just spent among the circus performers and, like, mm-hmm. them.
There's a lot of background characters that just kind of get added into the movie
without
introduction.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of, like, them coalescing into a family, like, within each other. Not, like, all of Circus plus Hugh Jackman. Like, Circus within each other, and then mix in Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron and Zendaya and everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I do like, you do get that in, like, the Come Alive song.
Yeah.
That's when you're seeing the circus, like, start taking its own
mm-hmm.
feet. And you see, like, Letty, who's, like, the bearded woman, like, not being sure, but, like, starts singing.
Yeah.
And really shines. And, I can't remember his name, the small.
Oh, Tom Thumb.
Tom Thumb. Like, that's, yeah, that's, like, his show name.
Yeah, yeah.
They give them show names. But you see, like, this, he's, like, what, like, 2.5 feet or, like, 3 feet or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah, he's actually that size. That's the...
Yeah.
That was this actor's first performance, and he's got actually a couple other roles lined up.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, he was dubbed over in this movie.
Yeah, it is very obvious dubbing over, but I think that was part of the charm of the thing.
Yeah, because this is all New York, and he's dubbed over with a thick, like Brooklyn accent.
Yes!
And Brooklyn, like, attitude.
Yeah!
But, like... You see them, and you see, like, the you know, world's heaviest man, and, like, the world's tallest man, and, like, all you see all of them, like, stumble out of the curtain in that song, and you see them all, like, get confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you see This Is Me.
Yeah.
That's when you're seeing, like, Hugh Jackman, like, forgetting who these people are and how much, like, he needs, like, they care about him and he cares about them.
Yeah.
And, like, they're just... pouncing through the street like it's West Side Story, and they're like, "This is us. Deal with it."
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. Yeah, you know, I love this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ranked The Greatest Showman as number 3. I thought it was fine, but it didn't really stick with me or make me compelled to watch it again. And I think it's because knowing, which I was warned before even watching this movie, don't actually look up P.T. Barnum, because this is not historically accurate whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of, not necessarily influenced my ultimate feelings about the movie. I don't know, I just feel like all of the stuff that I would have liked to see, I didn't get to see as much as I wanted to, and what the movie chose to focus on wasn't what I thought would have made it a better film.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I felt about it.
Yeah.
Number 3 is definitely Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not that I was very tired,
mm-hmm.
and mostly that it was very boring.
Yeah. I also have Oklahoma at 3rd. I think I kind of rank them based on Hugh Jackman's actual performance,
mm-hmm.
and he's good in Oklahoma, but like there's nothing particularly special about it. Like he's well suited for that role, but it's not like, oh, Hugh Jackman was born to play Curly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a perfectly competent, very charming job, but just no extra fun, exciting frills around it.
I put Oklahoma as number 2. I think the show itself is very dated,
mm-hmm.
but it is the top-notch version of the show that Hugh Jackman is in. And it's a bit too long, but I do still really enjoy parts of it,
mm-hmm.
and probably just the personal connection that I have to it is what made me rank it
mm-hmm.
above The Greatest Showman when I was ranking these, but yeah.
I would, I mean, you know who's number 1, so Les Mis is number 2. I did really enjoy watching Hugh Jackman grow in this movie, and watching characters take on to him, and his emotion and his voice get tied together in this movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, I put Greatest Showman at number two. He does it. It's such a fun movie. I'm really glad I watched it. I think more than anything else, this will be the movie I like will return to over and over again, because it's just,
it's fun.
It's delightful. And he does a really great job in it. But, and it's less about how this isn't good and more about just how I think Les Mis is better. So maybe I'll save further discussion for a couple minutes from now.
Okay. I put Les Mis as number one. I think the grittiness and realism in this musical is kind of what adds to my ultimate ranking of it, just because I think it will age better with that involved. And also, I think in terms of Hugh Jackman's performance, it's definitely not a vanity project for him.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't necessarily do this film out of, like, I want to look great, I want to sing great, I want all of the attention to be on me. Like, he's definitely doing it out of, I want to do this for the art of it and for the performance of it, and I will look as dirty as I have to in order to do it, which I feel like Anne Hathaway did the same thing too.
Yeah.
Couple of pig pens.
Yeah.
my number one is Greatest Showman. I was excited about this movie since I saw the trailers. I love music videos. I love when motion and music like coalesce into like one thing, into like compelling emotion, and I love how that is conveyed in this movie. There's so many great moments of music and beats tied to like choreography and acting that I probably almost cried at some of the choreography just because of how much I was enjoying it. So yeah, I love it.
And I put Les Miserables at number one because I think it's just a very, very good, I think out of these three performances, I think it's Hugh Jackman's best. I love all the different ways he sings and doesn't sing in his performance, all the different live choices that he makes. And you can kind of see in Greatest Showman, like, oh, you're doing a very good job, but you are slightly too old to be in this role. But in Les Miserables, he felt like completely believable throughout all like 20 years that story encompasses. And every time you see him doing something, it's, you believe it 100%. Like, it felt very real. And I know I said, like, oh, The Greatest Showman is so upbeat, it seems like that's closest to who Hugh Jackman is as like a real person. But there's also something very natural about Les Mis. I think Hugh Jackman, as fun as it is to see him being somebody fun, he's so good at like weathered and like beaten down. And it's just, oh, I think that was the strongest of these three performances, even if it wasn't like the most enjoyable movie.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, this has been another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. Follow us on social media and hope you come back for next week's episode.
So when our local Barnes & Noble closed, I found this book. It is a very loose retelling of Les Miserables from a series called Cozy Classics. It's like a little kid's board book, and every page is one illustration. I'm doing finger quotes because they're not drawings. They are felted dolls. These little hand-felted dolls in, like, poses, and they're really good. They're very expressive. And every page is, like, one picture of dolls and one word. So I'm going to read to you the Cozy Classics version of Les Miserables. Poor. We see Jean Valjean, numbers on his chest, beaten down, a broken man. Rich. Now it is when he is the mayor. Sad. We see Colette with her little broom. Cosette, her name's Cosette. Who's Colette? That's nobody.
Someone's Colette.
Somebody is Colette somewhere, but here it is Cosette. She's got her broom and she's sad. And the next page says happy. And this is Jean Valjean paying off the Thénardiers, and he's taken Cosette and her little doll away to a happy life. The next page is run. And this is Jean Valjean and Cosette running away from this dark, shadowy figure of Javert looming in the background. This dark, shadowy doll. And there's, like, it's at night, and there's, like, lighting. It's a very dramatic scene with these felted dolls. Like, felt Jean Valjean looks really concerned. Climb! It's the next page. Him and Cosette have to climb a wall to get away from angry, angry Javert with his stick that he's holding. It's just like a felt doll holding a toothpick. Stroll is the next word. You know that word every baby needs to learn, stroll. And this is adult Cosette walking along with older Jean Valjean, and Marius stands and watches them in the background. The next page is love, and here's Cosette and Marius together. A beautiful close-up on this excellent felt art. The next page is fire! And there's Marius with, like, a bunch of dynamite and a real matchstick jammed into his felt hand on top of this barricade. The next page is stop. And there is Jean Valjean trying to carry away the injured Marius, and Javert is there with his stick, and he's like, no, you go no further. The next page is dark, and this is when Jean Valjean has gotten away from Javert, and he's looking out of a window like, oh, I'm safe in this house, and Javert is stalking away like, no, and it is the angriest felt doll you've ever seen. He's so mad, him and his stick. The next page is together, and this is old dying Jean Valjean with Marius and Cosette. Really good posing on this. Cosette is like laying down crying on Jean Valjean's lap. There's real fabric folds. Her hair looks good, her felt hair. That's everything you need to know about Les Miserables and nothing more.
That was very heartfelt.
It was. Thank you.